Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook, along with Mr. Scott Reynolds and Trevor Sycamore. What's up, fellas?
Howdy ho.
How we doing, guys?
Who's supposed to be who?
I don't know, for a Kansas accent, which, I don't know. When I think of, the Midwest, I'm just like, we're going to go to the farm, and
no,
mama going to get some cattle.
No, that's more Alabama. Well, not that, they go get cattle. But, yeah, no, that's really not. I don't know what a Midwestern accent sounds like. I guess it just sounds like Scott. Who, by the way, if you haven't figured that out, that's not Scott Reynolds. That is, in fact, Matthew Matera, intern slash producer Matt. And the other voice you heard was not Trevor Sycamore. It was a man who is also attempting a man bun, I guess. I have no idea what he's doing with that hair.
I'm going through a phase.
Taylor Jenkins. Sometimes I want to call you Taylor Jennings. She was an intern we had before.
Yeah, I saw one of her tweets, actually, because I think she pops up every once in a while because, you follow her and someone else follows her. And she'd quoted one of my tweets. And I was
wow. Taylor Jennings super, quoting Taylor Jenkins.
Super just similar names.
She was more attractive than you. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, that's not hard.
No.
Yeah,
that's really not hard to do.
Why did your parents hate you?
Well, there's a lot of reasons.
They gave you a girl's name.
If you want to go into specifics.
What was the reason?
That's kind of true. Growing up, I always thought it was a girl's name, so I didn't really like it.
No, it is
a
girl's name.
Oh, I could go by TJ or something like that, but neither of my parents really like TJ.
TJ's a perfect nickname.
Now that I grow up, it's like everybody's TJ. There's so many TJs around.
I don't know any TJs.
Well, no one's actually born named TJ.
No, no one's born named TJ. But everybody goes by TJ. I feel like there's one in every crowd.
So you go with Taylor.
So I go with Taylor. My high school buddies call me by my last name, like Jinx or Jenkins, so that's a little better.
Hi, Jinx.
See, I've thought about
segment.
That for, or don't jinx it, something like that, a predictive piece.
2 minutes, 11 seconds into this podcast, and we have not spoken any football. And I'm kind of doing that as a reason, guys, because I let's just face it. The name of this podcast is going to be the Low Expectation Podcast. Without Scott and without Trevor, and I've got to carry this show, it's not going to be good.
I mean, I'm a seasoned veteran on this podcast now.
You've done four.
Each week. I get to speak just a little bit more. So by the time training camp comes around, I might have my own podcast.
You'll be doing it on your own.
And I'm a phenomenal pinch hitter. So I just step in and make hits.
You're the Rusty Staub of podcasts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I'll be the judge of that in about 34 minutes when this thing is finally over. Can't get over fast enough. All right, guys. The reason Scott Reynolds is not here, and Trevor as well, plus the fact that Trevor is concentrating more on the Draft Network these days, but the only reason Scott's not here is because he is en route to Indianapolis. We are taping this on Tuesday at, what time is it, 12:18 p.m., live from One Buccaneer Place. Scott Reynolds is on a flight to Indianapolis, and, man, he is on a star-studded flight. He texted me this morning. He's on a plane with Dennis Hickey, who used to work for the Buccaneers in the front office.
A-lister.
Lee DeKemper from Joe Bucks Fan. A-lister. Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times.
A-plus-plus.
A-plus-plus-lister.
Recurring guest.
Former Buccaneer offensive line coach George Warhop.
A lot of big bucks C-list. On that
C-list.
Flight.
I actually told him, I said, do not let George see you. If he's read anything you've written since he's been fired, you probably want to kind of shrink down in your seat a little bit, Scott. We haven't been that kind to George Warhop. There was somebody else. Oh, a new Buccaneer special teams coordinator, Keith Armstrong's on the flight as well.
A lot of big bucks on that flight. That's got to be
some guy named Bruce Arians.
I'm sure Armstrong's holding court, too. If you remember his press conference, it went on for 25 minutes.
I'm kidding. Arians is not on the flight. He would not be flying coach. I don't
know. He's flying private.
Maybe he would be. Maybe he's a down-to-earth,
he is a great
lunch
guy.
Pail kind of guy.
He always talks about grit. So he would be the guy. Last seat on the plane right next to the bathroom.
Yeah, no. I'm thinking Bruce was like, I've paid my dues, dude. I'm 66.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you have the option to sit first class, you go for it.
All right. Now we're 4 minutes and 33 seconds into this Low Expectation podcast. We want you to hang on. We don't know. It could get better. We're just going to see what happens over the next 30 minutes and try not to bore you completely to tears. All right. The Combine coming up really kicks off tomorrow, which is Wednesday, with the coach and general manager speaking to the media. What they'll do is they'll go to the podium and speak to all of the writers. And then what they normally do is they kind of go off separately with the local beat writers, and they kind of do a little one-on-one. And I don't know that we're going to get a lot of information. Let's be honest. I mean, just honestly, there's been little information coming out of One Buccaneer Place at all. And I don't know if that's by design with the new coaching staff, what it is. I mean, you know, as far as draft goes, free agency, what they're going to do with players, keep them, cut them, those kind of things. It's really been tough to get anything out of anybody so far this year. So I don't necessarily expect Bruce Arians and Jason Light to say, we're keeping McCoy definitely, we're definitely cutting DeSean Jackson, we're not signing Quan Alexander, and we're keeping Adam Humphries, or something along those lines. We're not going to get probably any definitive things, more than likely.
Well, and I don't really blame them, to be honest, because when you look at a coach, if they've been around in a team for a few years and they've kind of gotten to build their own roster and kind of do what they want with it, but now they're coming in and, I mean, I know they've evaluated the guys, but, I mean, one, the Bucs aren't in the best cap situation, and they've got just an entire team to try and start planning for and scheming around. And, I mean, Bruce Arians is the kind of guy that's going to come in here and have it one way and do it that way, and I think he's got a lot on his plate right now, so I don't really blame the lack of information on them. They've got a lot on their plates.
Yeah, and I think it's just exciting to hear Bruce Arians talk again. I mean, no one's really heard from him other than his introductory press conference. I mean, we got to speak to him a little bit at a different event. But, yeah, I mean, you kind of know going into this, like, what are you really going to get? Jason Light's not going to be like, yeah, we think Caleb Benenock sucks, so we're definitely going to draft the right guard. So they're not going to give you anything, but it's nice to just hear from
the thing is, though, the questions have to be asked, and as reporters and journalists, I mean, you have to ask those obvious questions.
No, yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
He's going to be asked tomorrow, whether it's Scott or Rick or Jenna or somebody's going to say, hey, what's the game plan with Gerald McCoy? Now, last week, Rick Stroud came out with a report that the Bucs are going to keep Gerald McCoy at his $13 million salary. We did our best to try and confirm that report with all of our sources, and basically we got, he's a Buccaneer for now. He'll be a Buccaneer until he's not a Buccaneer anymore, which is the bland, generic response. So I'm not sure exactly where Rick got that from. He may have got it from an agent. He may have got it from Gerald himself. They may have told Gerald these things. I don't know exactly where it came from. You know, Rick's not the type of guy that just throws stuff against the wall and sticks. Rick's pretty well plugged in, not just locally, but nationally as well. He's been doing this for a long time, since the early 90s, covering this football team. So, you know, Rick's got some very good sources. So that was surprising if it does, in fact, take place. We will talk about our battle plans that we've been working on a little bit later in the episode. But, you know, listen, I like Gerald McCoy. And this city will miss Gerald McCoy whenever that point is, when he's no longer a Buccaneer. On the field, in the community, all of those things. We don't really know how much we appreciate Gerald McCoy, even as media people, with, you know, talking to him in the locker room. You know, guy sticks around after every game through, you know, not hundreds of losses, but a lot of losses. And, you know, he's always a stand-up guy. So I think it's going to be one of those situations where we're gonna miss Gerald McCoy, realize how much we miss him when he is officially gone at some point. With that said, I just don't see justifying $13 million with, what, 6 sacks last year? In my battle plan, and I guess I'm teasing a little bit, I actually have the Buccaneers allowing him to walk. Scott and his had him trading Gerald McCoy. I just don't know that there's a huge market out there for an aging guy who's probably on the backside of his career, who's going to be paid $13 million for one season. So I don't know that there's a whole lot of trade value out there for Gerald McCoy.
No, and I agree. I think Gerald McCoy, if you look at his value, it is probably at its highest with the Buccaneers. And that's not just with his production. That's what he means to the city and how long he's been around and how long he's been. I mean, third on the all-time sack list. He's been a consistent producer, at least, you know, for the last 8-9 years. And you do look at his production now and his 6 sacks in each of the last 2 years. Now, granted, last year he had a couple that I think were probably freebies. One's against the Giants where Eli Manning was already on the ground, and one against the 49ers where Mullins is already on the ground. But
hey, Michael Strahan set the record with Brett Favre falling down on purpose. Yeah. So we can't knock. You're going to get a couple of those freebies every once in a while.
Eli Manning is notorious for turtling, like, as soon as the pocket closes in a little bit.
Absolutely,
like, right,
but at the same time, like, it's Jets in a situation where we're looking at a lack of production. And so I think, again, teasing in my battle plan a little bit, when you keep Gerald McCoy, it really kind of handcuffs you, and I'm not even sure how he'll fit in this scheme. But again, I think the defense will be very variable with a lot of 4-3 looks just because of the way the talent is situated on here. And in my battle plan, if I can give away a little bit, it's coming out later today, I have them keeping him for at least a year, seeing what he can do with Todd Bowles, because you kind of handcuff yourself for cap this year. But again, at the end of this year, if he doesn't work out and he doesn't make a significant improvement under this more aggressive defense, you can get rid of him just the same, and it's really a one-year issue.
But if you're playing end, essentially, if they're lining up in a 3-4 and he's essentially playing an end, although, again, with a 3-4 over or under, you know, you've got JPP standing up on the line of scrimmage possibly, so it appears to be a four-man front, and you can shift guys. You know, he's not going to be playing a whole lot true defensive end, but it's sometimes maybe he's going to slide inside and be more of a nose tackle too. It just depends on what Todd Bowles does. Well, I don't know that those three down linemen in a 3-4 are big sack guys. You know, they're more there to hold the line of scrimmage,
take on double teams
and allow your linebackers to be more of the playmaker. So you say improve. I just don't know. I mean, I think if he were to get six sacks again in this defense, I think that would be good. Now, again, you know, you can't account for disruption. And, you know, that's something that a lot of fans don't see, and even us in the press box at times. You know, there were games last year where, you know, you say to yourself, you look at the stat sheet, Gerald McCoy has one solo tackle, one combined, and one quarterback hit, and you're like, wow, man, that was an awful game. If you go back and look at the film, though, you know, he affected things. JPP gets 12 and a half sacks because some of the things that Gerald McCoy does. Carl Nassib gets his sacks some of the times because of what Gerald McCoy does. So you can't just look at it from that perspective, although it's easy to do that. Just look at it at the bottom line of the stats go. You know, Gerald, I don't know, and I've been covering this team full-time since 2011, worked back with Scott in the old Buccaneer magazine days back in the mid-90s, but have watched, listened to on the radio, or attended every single game since 1977 when I watched my first Buccaneer game as a kid. I don't know that there's been a more polarizing guy, right? People love Gerald McCoy or people hate Gerald McCoy. There's not a whole lot of middle ground, right?
That's very true.
You know, I could take him, I could leave him. No. And when we wrote in our battle plans, I mean, people were either like, you know, that is the greatest thing in the world. You got to get rid of Gerald McCoy. And then you had other guys saying, are you people crazy? You know, and I had a lot of people, because I had mine getting rid of him. They're like, what are you going to do? Now you're a veteran guy as far as your defensive linemen go, because we counted Nassib and JPP as outside linebackers. Now Vita Vea is your veteran guy there, because I also had him get rid of, you know, Bo Allen and some other veteran guys too. So, you know, Gerald McCoy, again, I personally, it would be hard for me to justify it. But look, if Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles and this defensive staff have evaluated Gerald McCoy and have already come to the conclusion, if Rick Stroud's report is correct, that they're going to keep Gerald McCoy, then obviously they see the value there, and they see the value at $13 million. So, you know, who are we to say, really? I mean, they're crazy. We'll know in a year if Gerald ends up with two sacks and, you know, he's eating up $13 million and they weren't able to go find another free agent safety or something along those lines because of the salary issues. You know, then we can certainly second guess and play armchair quarterback to Bowles and Light and Bruce Arians at that point, I guess.
Yeah, and another thing with Gerald, too, if he does stay on the Bucs, it'll be his 10th year, I believe. He's been through so many coaches and defensive coordinators. It's been at least like five defensive coordinators now. So he's been asked to do so many different things and not even being put in the best spot to showcase his best skills.
How many defense coordinators did Warren Sapp have?
I don't know. Only one. Wow.
Yeah, Monty Kiffin. Well, that's not true. His first year when he was drafted in 95, I think 95 may have been Floyd Peters, because Sam Weich was the coach. But, you know, in his Buccaneer career, he essentially had one guy, Monty Kiffin. Derek Brooks, same thing. You know, Rondé Barber. These guys, whose names are on the wall over there, had one, right? Now, they had a few different position coaches. Rod Marinelli was here, and some different guys as they were promoted and went on to do other things. But all in all, what Gerald McCoy philosophy, I'm sorry, what Warren Sapp was asked to do, as far as the philosophy goes, stayed the same. Might have been a few little nuances as far as the individual coaching goes, but the scheme was the same scheme for his entire time here, except for that first year. Gerald McCoy certainly hasn't had that. Now, I'm not comparing Gerald to Warren. Two different types of players. I think it's unfair to really judge anybody or compare anybody to Warren Sapp, who was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, this guy, to me, was the greatest Buccaneer in the history of the organization. Some argue, Leroy Selman argue, some might argue Derek Brooks. I still say if I'm starting a football team, Warren Sapp's my guy of all the Buccaneer players who have played during the 43-year history. He's my guy that I'm starting the franchise with. But, you know, Gerald has certainly, as you mentioned, Matt, has been handcuffed due to the fact that he's had multiple coaches. And really, with all of these defense coordinators, tend to come a different philosophy as well, too. And then the defensive line coaches have their ways of doing things. Jay Hayes, you know, one of these guys to shuffle a little bit, right, instead of one step straight ahead. Last year, Brenson Buckner asked these guys to do things a little bit differently. I think as a coaching staff, you've got to look at who you have and what they do best. We know what Gerald's best move is. It's getting up the field. He still has as quick a get off, really, as anybody in the league. And asking him to do anything other than that really has been a crime, in my opinion, over the last 9 years anyway. I mean, you don't want Gerald McCoy in there just to occupy blocks. I mean, Gerald McCoy's job is to get up the field and pressure the quarterback and from that three technique position. But we'll see how it goes under Todd Bowles. That's enough, I guess, on Gerald McCoy. I think we all agree you have him, Taylor, sticking around. Matt and I both have him being cut. Is that right?
No, I have him staying.
You have him staying too? Yeah. So I'm the only person with any sense on this podcast.
I mean, I guess just kind of buy into the report, I guess, for now. And I mean, like you said, it came from Rick Stroud. He's the guy that's been around. He generally is pretty on point with his reports. But, I mean, he's just a guy that I think if, and I really truly think, I know all the talk is that the Bucs are going to move to a base, quote-unquote, 3-4 under and run kind of a 3-3-5 defense. Most are nickel nowadays out of their base. Mm-hmm. But I really think that when you look at the talent on this team and the defensive coaches led by Bowles are going to have to adjust to that. And while they may want to run a 3-4 under base in theory, the way the talent's aligned, especially if you think Gerald McCoy has that value at $13 million this year, that you're going to see a lot of 3-4 looks. And I mean, that isn't just for Gerald McCoy's sake. I think that's
3-4 or 4-3 looks.
4-3 looks. Yeah. I'm sorry, because you're going to have Jason Pierre-Paul, who's not a traditional 3-4 end. You're going to have Carl Nassib, who's not a traditional 3-4 end. I think Will Golston might actually play better than he has in a 3-4 set. But I think they're built to run a lot of 4-3 this year. And if you make that transition, it's a little more down the line as you kind of build your roster around how you want it.
All right, let's talk a little bit about our battle plans and what our battle plans are. And I think some people got the wrong idea that we were predicting what Jason Light and his front office and Bruce Arians was going to do. These battle plans we did is we get to play fantasy general manager, right? Now we had to go by the same parameters that these guys do, and that's, you know, salary cap and drafts and all of those things. So it is a pretty exhausting thing, as you guys have found out. I think this is the third year that Scott and I have done them, and Trevor, maybe the second year. I can't even remember. But it does take a long time because we do have to factor in the cap, and so we have cuts. And in mine, I had a couple restructure deals. I had Levante David taking a bit of a pay cut this year to free up some money for this team, because he's due $9.75 million this year. You know, we talk about Gerald McCoy. You keep him at $13 million. You know, here's Levante David, an undersized linebacker, right? I think in a 3-4 scheme, we'll see how it works out, where he's going to play at. But, you know, is his value still there at $9.75? In my opinion, if Gerald McCoy is worth $13 million and Levante David's worth $9.75 all day long, because I think he's still – I think he had a really good year last year. And I think that, you know, this bowl system is going to be more of an aggressive system, and he's going to get an opportunity to showcase what he did when I think he had his best year actually under Greg Schiano back in 2013 or 14, somewhere along there. I think it was 2014 in Greg's last year, where I think where Levante had his best year ever. Anyway, all right, along the lines of the battle plan, again, what we did is we took a look at, you know, who the Buccaneers keep, who they cut, who they sign, exclusive right free agents. We did it, and then we even did a projected 53-man roster, which that's probably the most inaccurate thing, because we don't know how many people they're just going to sign off the streets after the draft, undrafted guys that make this team. Players, there's no way to predict that part of things. But as far as the draft, the cuts, and things like that go, We don't want to give them away because we want you guys to go to pewterreport.com and read them. And then tomorrow we're actually going to have a story up, and then you're going to be able to go vote in our Pewter poll sponsored by Ford's Garage, where you're going to be able to vote on which one that you like the best. Now, again, remember, this is not what we think the Buccaneers are going to do. It's what we would do if we were Jason Light. And, again, we get it easy, right? We can spend 3 days and do this. He spends all year planning these rosters and scouting draft things and deciding who they're going to keep and not keep and things like that. So, again, this is more of a Madden-type scenario where we can kind of not force things a little bit because they still have to fall within the parameters of the salary cap.
Right.
But kind of our wish list.
Take a couple of liberties.
Right.
With, you know, signing deals and stuff like that.
Yeah, and, you know, I had them signing Donovan Smith for an average of $11 million on a long-term deal. I don't know that he does that. You know, that may be too much of a hometown discount. Now, the left tackle position at the franchise tag that we know is around $14 million. You know, would he take 11, 11 and a half, 12, somewhere along that way for a long-term deal? I don't know. If I'm Donovan Smith, I would. You know, I don't want to uproot and have to move to another city, learn a, you know, whole new team, a whole new locker room and things like that. But again, you know, if he can get $13 or $14 million for a long-term deal over the course of a contract, then I think he would be foolish not to take that. However, again, I think the point is moot. Buccaneers are going to keep him one way or the other via a long-term deal or the franchise tag for sure. You draft, I mean, if you get rid of, in a lot of, again, he's another guy that is polarizing too with Buccaneer fans. If you get rid of Donovan Smith, you have a huge hole on this offensive line. Now, a lot of people say with Donovan Smith, you have a huge hole because he's a liability. I don't see that. He's better, I think, than what most fans think, but he's not as good as he should be.
Yeah, everyone just likes to point out when he does make a mistake, and there were situations of that last season. But
That's what happens with offensive linemen, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
no one wants to praise
them.
No one wants to praise them, but if they let up a sack or something, it's the, you know, it's the end of the world.
But why with Donovan? And I think the thing that frustrates people is Donovan tended to string his three bad plays together, it seemed like. Remember the Giants game last year where he jumped off sides like twice in a row or something like that? Then he had a penalty. I mean, it was just boom, boom, boom. You know, Donovan Smith, I think it was a Giants game. But that tends to happen with Donovan from time to time. And, you know, he can play 98% of the time really good and really solid. But, boy, those two or three plays that he has bad tend to look really bad. And I think at that position, at the left tackle, you know, that's how Jameis Winston ends up, you know, with a bum shoulder. And, again, I'm not blaming him for that a couple years ago. I'm just saying, as a blindside protector, that's how quarterbacks end up getting hurt, right, mainly from, you know, getting blindsided and driven into the turf.
And for people who don't want Donovan Smith to stick around for this kind of one-year prove-it deal if they franchise tag him, do you know how hard it is to get a good left tackle?
That's what I was going to say.
There's a reason there aren't good tackles in the free agent market on the left side.
There's no
if
one
you've got a good one,
right now,
you keep him. Joe Thomas stuck around with the Browns, and they paid him well for how long? Because when you have a left tackle, it really doesn't matter. You keep them when they're good.
And then if you decide to keep Donovan or whatever you decide to do with him as well, you know, DeMar Dotson on the other side, he's getting up there in age. You're going to have to replace him in the next couple of years
as well. And I do think the Buccaneers do draft a tackle, but really when you look at the tackles in the draft this year, I think most project to be better right tackles than left tackles. So that's why I don't think you take a tackle at number five, even Jonah Williams. I mean, yes, he could end up being a very solid left tackle, but I'm telling you, I do not believe Jonah Williams is an upgrade to Donovan Smith in year one. And Bruce Arians is trying to win football games this year. This is not a five-year plan with Bruce Arians. So you're going to put a rookie out there as your blindside protector for your franchise quarterback or your hope-to-be franchise quarterback this year at the end of the year. And I just don't think that's a good idea, in my opinion. I mean, yes, Donovan Smith has his faults and his deficiencies, but I just think you're asking a tackle. And listen, offensive tackle, notoriously in the last 5 years, have been slower to develop. And a lot of that is because of the type of offenses that colleges are run, more of the spread. Now, you know, Alabama, you know, has some you know, they're a multiple type formation and philosophy and scheme wise offense. They don't run a spread offense necessarily, but, you know, they are in the shotgun a lot and they do run some read option and things like that. So again, It takes a little bit longer, in my opinion, and not just my opinion. I've talked to general managers and different scouts who have said the same thing. It's getting more and more difficult to really evaluate offensive linemen because of the schemes the college football teams are running, and you just don't see a lot of that in the NFL. You're seeing more of the RPOs maybe in the last year or two, but you're not going to see true spread offenses in the NFL like you do in the college ranks. So, again, it takes a little bit longer to develop those guys. And, listen, there's no consensus as the top tackle. You've got guys that are saying Juwan Taylor out of Florida is the best guy, and you've got people saying that Jonah Williams is the best guy. There's not a Quentin Nelson, right, who's a surefire, plug-and-play, 10-year, Pro Bowl kind of guy. Of course, he was a guard, but that type of player in this draft. If there was, then absolutely you're the Buccaneers. You're thinking to yourself, man, you know, we're sitting here at number five. We hope to not be in this position for a long time after this draft. So you almost would have to take a guy like that. But I just don't see one of those being in the draft.
Yeah, it's tough to pick an offensive lineman within the first five picks of the draft and not know that it's a sure thing.
Right. I'll tell you what is a sure thing. Getting your boat fixed. Look.
Super important.
Now we got a little bit of a cold front coming through. We've got some rain the next couple days, but the fishing reports are already off the charts right now. Snook have moved back onto the flats, out of the rivers, out of the deep canals and things like that. They're feeding actively as the water temperature approaches 70 degrees. Look, don't get caught with your pants down. That's not a reference to Robert Kraft. I'm just saying, do not get caught with your pants down and have your boat not seaworthy when it's time to go out, because fishing is going to explode very, very soon. You want to be able to take it to a place, and there's one place to take that. I just can't remember the name of it, guys.
T.J. Mahoney's?
No.
Close. T.D.
Oh, it's T.A. Mahoney's.
T.A. Mahoney's. That's right. T.A. Mahoney's, 50th Street in Adamo. Been in business since 1948. They are the place to get all of your marine needs taken care of, from getting your boat tuned up, your trailer fixed, to just the simplest things. Maybe you just need a simple pack of hooks. Maybe you need some sinkers. Maybe you just need some advice. Here's the thing I love about T.A. Mahoney's. Family-owned and operated. A lot of the guys that have worked there for years. When you go in there, everybody greets you. What do you need? And they'll sit and just chat. I see guys sitting on the stools at the front counter just chatting away. It's like an old town, old time country store type feel, right? Now there's not two old dudes out front playing checkers. But I'm telling you, T.A. Mahoney's is a place to go. Just go chat them up. Just soak in some of their knowledge and obviously buy their products. But most importantly, thank them for sponsoring the Pewter Nation podcast, TAMahoney.com online. They've been in business since 1948, 50th Street and Adamo in Tampa. Go check them out and tell them Pewter Report sent you.
Go get a flare gun.
Flare guns. Scott is big on flare guns. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that TSA probably stopped him from boarding his plane today with that flare gun.
Well, it didn't say T.A. Mahoney's on it, did it? So no. There's no way they can trace it back.
No,
to
it's not going
to
be a trace back. No, whew. Absolutely not. No. Hopefully Scott left that in the car, because he doesn't go really anywhere without a flare gun, which is probably a smart move these days. Anyway, you know, we're complaining about a little bit of cold here. I think it's like 20 degrees in Indianapolis right now. So like Scott that. Asked me, you want to go to Indy? I'm like, no, I'm good.
I'd rather go to Alabama.
I'll go to Phoenix for the owners' meeting. I'm good. Yeah, no, I don't want to do the 20 degrees in Indianapolis. But we will have full wall-to-wall coverage of everything going on up in Indianapolis, including Bruce Arians and Jason Light speaking on Wednesday. Let's see, what else can we talk about? By the way, I'm going to tell you this right now. Guess where I ate dinner at last night?
Oh, I saw it. You're the, what is it, the godfather?
The godfather of the
Ford Garage
in Brandon. Yes, I am. Now, no one officially dubbed me that. I just made it up myself. But I kind of feel that way. I feel like I'm carrying the torch for Ford's Garage throughout the area. And, look, last night I had some salmon that was caught off of T.A. Mahoney's boat. That's not true.
How was it?
There's no salmon in Florida. That's just not true. I'm lying now. But I did have the salmon, the blackened salmon. It's always my favorite. People say, hey, you get salmon at a burger joint. Look, you can't go wrong with the salmon at Ford's. You can't go wrong with the burgers. You can't go wrong with anything. The Brandon location has this new thing, a loaded tater tot with, like, cheese and jalapenos and things like that. I mean, it's out of control. It's a Brandon is kind of their test market for some new menu items. And I didn't have it last night because I didn't bring any Rolaids with me. But I'm telling you, if you're a Tater Tot fan, it looked amazing on the menu.
I'm going to have to make it down there because I'm a bit of a potato connoisseur.
Mm-hmm.
I love tater tots. I love French fries. So anything that can spice tell. That up. And yeah, it's not hard to
we
tell.
We can tell you're a big
I'm definitely
starch,
not a lettuce
carb
connoisseur.
Guy.
Like, I'm not a lettuce connoisseur. I'm a meat and potatoes guy. So I might have to make it down there, and tater tots and French fries are specifically my favorite. So you spice them up, you do something special to them, and
they've changed their fries too. They have new wedge fries that are really good. I like those a lot too. I'm a mashed potato guy for the most part, but I had the rice and the broccoli with my salmon last night. Very healthy,
yeah.
Low calorie type meal. Now I chased it down with two regular Cokes, so I kind of killed the health. Yeah. But I mean, it could have been worse. I could have had fried chicken wings and two Cokes, but I had the healthy food part of it anyway. So Ford's Garage, located throughout the Tampa Bay area and all the way up in Michigan. We had somebody tweet the other day that they were up in Michigan and made a 30-minute detour just to go to the Ford's Garage, and they tweeted that picture out. So we appreciate them for listening and for patronizing Ford's Garage. Find them at FordsGarageUSA.com. You can find them on the web. You can check out all of the locations, find out their hours of operation, how to get there, and they even list all of their menus. And we didn't even talk about drinking because Scott's not here. So, but if you're a drinker, Ford's Garage is the place to go. And last night I got to watch the Lightning play too. So it was great. They got multiple TVs. They're big Lightning fans there. Go check them out. Ford's Garage. I'm always at the Brandon location, but they got locations in Wesley Chapel, Countryside, Orlando, Lakeland, West Chase.
Fort Myers.
Dearborn, Michigan. I think they're going to be in Hanoi, Vietnam, where the summit meeting's taking place with – No, probably not yet.
That's interesting.
I haven't heard.
Yeah, I don't know if Trump likes Ford's Garage or not.
Just like the Gerald McCoy story, I cannot confirm.
Cannot confirm nor deny that story. Guys, what else you want to talk about? I think we've kind of covered what we've got right now. Now, Scott is planning on getting a podcast up later this week, probably tomorrow night or Thursday from Indianapolis. Hopefully that takes place. So we'll have two this week. We missed ours last week because I had got my eye cut open and a new lens put in it. Don't get old, guys. Cataract surgery is no fun.
I don't plan on it.
Yeah, it's not good. So anyway, I still have my eye. I'm not wearing an eye patch, so that's good. So shout out to my doctor, Dr. Sammy, over in Brandon for taking care of my eye. And hopefully I'll be able to see better pretty soon. And then people can't complain about my most impressive or disappointing list. They're like, what are you, blind? Right now I can literally say in one eye, yes, I can't see very well. So hopefully that'll all be corrected by the football season. What else, guys? We good?
I just want to mention my battle plan a little bit. I didn't
quickly
get to give too much.
Quickly, don't bore people. They're tuning out right now, Matt.
I beefed up the linebacker group.
I hear people clicking off.
Lineman group, and I know everyone wants Tevin Coleman or Mark Ingram, but I went an alternate route with the running back.
Don't tell them who. Make them look it up.
I know. I wasn't
good.
I just said an alternate route.
Yes, you did. And I was quite surprised about that alternate route. Also, at the linebacker position, you had somebody that I hadn't thought of, so that was good. Taylor, you have any major surprises coming in yours, which will be released later? Today, again, is Tuesday. We'll have Taylor's, which is the fifth and final battle plan. Any major blockbuster deals?
I actually did. I think people are going to be surprised. I traded away a loved player. I don't know if he might have been featured in another battle.
You traded
plan.
Away Mike Evans?
No.
Jameis Winston?
He's a guy that the Bucs can afford to lose, but he's a guy that might hurt the hearts of some fans. I think my battle plan is going to make some of them happy, some of them sad, and some of the Bucs fans sick. But
I can't believe you re-signed Brett Grimes.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude. What were you thinking?
Thinking outside the box.
Made him a full-time starter, but he got to decide how he wanted to play the coverage. You actually made him – I was reading your draft. You actually signed him to cornerback, made him team captain, and also co-defensive coordinator.
Co-defensive coordinator. That's the big one.
Yeah.
Because now he's got his hand in the pot, and I also made him co-general manager so he can pay himself whatever he wants depending on who he has to cover.
Miko is the assistant general manager too, right?
Well, she'd have to be. That's part of the deal.
All right. Well, make sure to check out our Bucks battle plans. Also, make sure to check out PewterReport.com all week for the best full coverage, wall-to-wall coverage of everything going on up in Indianapolis where we are live with Scott Reynolds. For Taylor Jenkins / Jennings.
I'm out.
For Matthew Matera? Matera?
Matera.
Matera. I'm Mark Cook with no Scott Reynolds or Trevor Sickema signing off. Sam, we'll see you later in the week with another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out.
Out.